Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and I'm here with Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg.
Hi.
Now, between us, we've lived in over 12 countries. This podcast is all about living a fat expat life. And by that, I mean packing it full with as much as you can. We've had over 1 million downloads of this little podcast, and we have a great Fat Expats Facebook group, if you're interested, that has over 10,000 people. We talk about everyday expat life, whether that's expat money or maybe the lack of it, expat relationships, expat travel, you get the picture. Okay, it's time to get started. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. I have a cold, but that's, you know, not necessary to discuss, except as an excuse for my voice. But what I want to say is this is your 100th episode. So 100 episodes. How do you feel, Kirsty? Do you feel 100?
No. I don't feel like we've got to 100 episodes, if that's what you're talking. I do feel 100 if I look at myself in the mirror. But the fact that when we went to start this, you told me I sounded soft, and we realised it was because I had my microphone around the wrong way, pointing the wrong direction. You'd have to say I haven't learnt much in those 100 episodes, would you?
Well, I'm only 50 episodes in, so that totally excuses my last week not having my microphone connected for the whole episode. Today we have something a little bit different planned. We're going to do our regular episode, and then I'm going to take you for a little walk down memory lane, and we're going to listen to some snippets from some old episodes of the podcast. And you don't know what they are yet. You haven't heard them. So it's a surprise for your 100th podcast birthday.
Ooh, good. Okay. So, Nikki, we usually break the podcast up into a few different topics. We have geographically challenged, where we talk about how everybody's going, what it's like to feel like your head's in one place and your heart's in another, or how you're coping with your new destination or leaving your old. Then we move on to expat relationships. We talk about technically expat, where we look at all the new tech things that are available to us, and we do expat relationships. Nikki, today with geographically challenged, I was going to talk about heading to a newcomer event when you're actually an old timer who needs new friends. And what this came out of is, you know, when you move to a new location, you kind of immediately join every possible club and organisation and maybe even sport or group that you can find, just in the hope of making some new friends and sort of finding out the lay of the land of your new location that you're going to or your new home. And I definitely have done that everywhere I've lived. And you know, Nikki, you and I talked about this last week with small children and how it's a lot easier with small children. But there's the other factor too of what if you're like me and you've been in a location for, I'm heading into my 9th year, of, well, how do you meet new people? Because I've been through maybe even 2 cycles of friends now, where I've had friends that came for a few years and left, and another group of friends that came for a few years and left, and now I feel like I'm restarting again. Have you done that? What's your longest time that you've been anywhere, Nikki?
We were in Hong Kong for 6 years.
Right.
And that was my longest time. So I'm not as old as you, but I certainly had cycled through a couple of groups of friends then. It was different though because I was working, so it was a different kind. I mean, I was working in an office environment. I know you also work, but it's a bit different because you work away from people as such. But I did join, I reckon I joined a hockey team in my 3rd year there, and it just really did refresh my whole friendship group. And, yeah, you get to the stage where we've always talked about that you need friends in the same stage as you. So if you're a new expat, you need friends who are also new, because you need to be able to commiserate with each other about just all the ridiculous things and all the amazing things and all the things that a more seasoned person in the same location just rolls their eyes a little bit about, because they're thinking, oh, you'll get over that, you'll get over that, that'll become normal. But I think as a long-term expat, you also need friends in that same stage of life too. And you know, if your friends are leaving and leaving, how do you do it?
Yeah, well, I wrote a little post in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group about, you know, I'd been to the back to school night and felt it was much harder in middle school, you know, when you have little people and, you know, it's easy because you've got to sit together. We talked about this last week, but with big people, there's a lot more drop-offs, et cetera. Anyway, there were a lot of people that gave great ideas, but I had created an event for a meetup. And so we had 16 women, I think it was, in total who came. And I was really surprised because I thought, you know, on Facebook it's kind of easy to say, yes, you're going to an event and not show up, don't you think?
Yes.
It's not quite the same as the formal RSVP. Do you know, you're not quite as accountable. So I'd had 16 people say they were going to show up, but then there hadn't been a lot of conversation back and forth about, you know, where are we going to meet or how are we going to meet. I'd kind of put a couple of random posts saying, okay, how about this coffee shop, and got crickets back, and then said, I'm going to sit out the front. And I think one person said, yep, great. And one person said, I can't come. And I was thinking, oh, God, this is going to be terrible. Well, it was the polar opposite. It was absolutely fantastic. And I did. I made a whole lot of new friends and that I had people I'd never seen before. But the interesting thing as an old timer was I also reconnected with a couple of people I had not seen. There was a woman who arrived who I met 8 years ago, and I guess through kids at different schools, she'd done a little bit of back and forth with older kids, you know, me as well. We had never really sort of seen each other again. You know, we'd met at a couple of parties, but we'd never seen each other again. So it just made me realize there were, I guess, my two epiphanies for this week were, number one is you need to get out of the house to meet people. And that sounds ridiculous, but you know how you have that single friend who tells you she can't meet anyone and you're quietly thinking, yeah, well, you're not going to meet anyone in your lounge room on your couch. Do you know you're going to have to get out? The same applies to the expat. And it was when I'd written that post about meeting people that everybody was talking about how they'd met people and how they go about meeting people. And, you know, sometimes you just need to write something down for it to jog your memory to make you go, I know the answer to this. I'm just not thinking about this clearly. Because when I thought about all the people I'd met, sometimes it was just standing in a coffee shop and just creating a conversation about a newspaper article, or being in the line, you know, at a supermarket and starting up a chat. It wasn't that you'd gone to a club or that there'd been some sort of formal introduction. They were just people you'd happened across. And I loved, there were a couple of stories in that post where there was one woman who said she was standing in the supermarket line with a full trolley with the woman next to her, had the same thing, and they ended up abandoning their trolleys and going for coffee, and that's how they became best friends in their expat
location. Oh, that is an awesome story. I didn't see that. That is a fabulous story.
So I
want to ask you a question then about the people that you met that you haven't met before. What happened next? Did you decide you'd meet again in the future? Did you exchange numbers? Did you friend people on Facebook? Like, how are you going to progress these relationships, if at all?
Yeah. Well, I left in a massive rush because I start work at midday, right? So, you know, I work evening hours in Australia, which are very convenient daytime hours in Qatar. So I was doing the mad panic of, oops, I've got to go. And I literally ran away from the group, that which must have been a great visual for anyone who was thinking, I wonder how that went. But I'm kind of thinking, because that event's there and the people have said yes, that we will just move on from that. So someone immediately said in the group, should we do it again next week? And someone else said, I'd love to do it again next month. So what I'm kind of hoping is that I will put it out there again, make another time for us to meet again. There are enough people that also said, I wish I would have known about this because I posted a picture in our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, and there were other people in Doha that said, I wish I would have known about this. I think there's a few people that have also said, I'd prefer to do this in the evening because there's people who work, obviously. So I think it will continue to happen. I actually think, Nikki, and you and I haven't spoken about this yet, but I do think, you know, we should encourage as many Two Fat Expat meetups as we can. I think it's tough because then you go, well, how does that kind of fit with the whole group and the podcast and everything else? But I think if the rules are, you know, everyone's welcome, play nice, you know, the same rules as the group, I guess. And
yes. Well, I mean, yeah, we have had group people from the group already do that and set up events. So there is an upcoming one in Dubai, but there's been one in Melbourne. You've had the one in Doha. And can I just say, I saw the one in Doha about 3 or 4 times on my Instagram feed because you posted your photo and then people were reposting it saying, oh, there I am in this photo. You know, we did this great coffee meetup today.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
They were all posted, could I just say, using the hashtag #TwoFatExpats.
Yay!
Which is a great hashtag to follow on Instagram if you happen to be there.
Yeah, so look, I definitely plan to do it again. The great thing for me was that there was a woman who had just arrived and she'd been there for 3 weeks. She was hysterical. And there was people there who'd been there for 10 years. So there was a real mix. And for me it was a great reminder of, you know, there are people, you can have expats who have very young children who are in their first, you know, step out into the expat world, and I love hearing, you know, their ideas about, you know, what this life's going to look like or what they find fascinating that I've probably lost the fascination of but need to be reminded of how cool it is. And it shows you that you need to be an expat community. You need to be sharing ideas and information because you can really help people. Like if you've got the kid who's 10 years down the track in that particular education system, or the kid that's had that particular health issue, or you're the woman who's managed to find herself a new gig, you know, work-wise, this is all information you can assist and help with others. And that's why we need
takes a village
together. It does take a village. Okay, so that's geographically challenged. Now I want to remind people too of how to leave a message or ask a question while they're here. So if you don't have your expat village around you but you want some information on something, pop on over to our Two Fat Expats page. It's just twofatexpats.com, and you'll see a little microphone. It is as easy as leaving a voicemail. So just leave us a message and tell us what your issue of the week is or what you'd like to see covered or what you think we've missed. If you're sitting there screaming at your computer or phone or whatever about what we've just said, please leave us a message. Okay, Nikki.
Wait, before we move on, yes. I just want to say someone who might be screaming at the computer or their phone is the Singapore Two Fat Expat ladies who've had more than one Two Fat Expat meetup, and I just want to give a shout out to them.
Yes.
I mentioned some other places, but I didn't mention them.
Now, you know, Nikki, the first Singapore was the first Two Fat Expats meetup we had where I went and did a reading and we had a lunch at the Hilton, which was fantastic. We have to do one of those meetups again. So I'm thinking, Nikki, mid-year next year before the summer, you and I are going to have to arrange to meet somewhere for a Two Fat Expats meetup where we do that same format, where we have a meal, do a reading, have a bit of fun.
Perfect. Yes. I also like the Shanghai idea where we did our Big Fat Expat meetup in Shanghai and it was just a drinks focus. There were some snacks, but oh yeah, okay, we can have a meal as well. But you also did a reading there.
Okay. So, Nikki, expat relationships, what's going on with yours?
I'd like to tell you that I hosted Cookbook Club this week. my recent foray into Cookbook Club. So it was one of those things where think about the cookbooks that you have on your shelf and where they come from and where you pick them up, and they might be from different countries or whatever. But before I ever moved away, I had 4 or 5 Donna Hay cookbooks.
Yeah.
And when you host Cookbook Club, if you're Australian, you know who Donna Hay is, and you probably may have one of her cookbooks. And when you host Cookbook Club, you choose a cook, and everybody either accesses one of those cookbooks, or a lot of people now have recipes online, which Donna Hay has a whole website. And I said, okay, I'm choosing Donna Hay. Everybody who's coming has to make a Donna Hay recipe. That's how it works. And no one who came, there was no other Australians, but not one of them had ever heard of Donna Hay before. And they left raving fans.
I bet.
So,
I bet.
So there you go. So it was just fascinating to me that you know, we all have an interest in cooking. We all sort of live an international lifestyle, and they hadn't actually heard of Donna. I mean, I've been to these cookbook clubs before. We did a Jamie Oliver one. We did a mixed one, and we did a Caribbean cooking one another night. But I just thought, wow, I don't know. I really enjoy it. It's expat life. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
So how many people do you have in your cookbook club?
Well, there's 150 in the group.
Oh, my gosh. How does that work?
But that's a Facebook group. So what it works is somebody says that they'll host, and they say the month and the time and the date. And they say, I can host 18 people at my house, say. Or I can host 10, or I can host 12. And then you reply with a date and time, and which is also time stamped. And then after the number is reached, people say, okay, the hostess will say, okay, number's reached, but please add yourself to the wait list, because there are always people that pull out. So I had 16 people who were confirmed to come, and then on the night we had 11 because people pulled out at the last minute, which is fine. I don't have an issue with that. And actually, if I'd had 16, the table configuration, everything would have been quite different. And we had 11, so we all were able to sit around our dining room table. And it was really lovely. And it usually finishes, I don't know, the ones I've been to finish about 11, and these girls started rolling out about midnight from my house. So I felt, okay, I feel successful.
Nice.
They stayed for an extra hour.
Now, did you have any Brits in that group?
I did have a Brit who made an eggplant dish that she insisted on calling aubergine.
Which is also a beautiful word with a French accent to aubergine.
She happens to be bilingual and speaks French only to her children. So, yes, we called it the disputed vegetable.
Yes, when my daughter was at a French immersion school, I used to make her say aubergine over and over and over again because I just thought it was the cutest thing. Now tell me, I just want to apologise if anyone can hear the ding before and then the ding again. I have turned off my phone, but it's coming through my computer. My husband is just letting me know that he's landed in the Philippines, and now he's letting me know that he's gone through customs. I imagine we're going to get another ding soon when he gets through out of the airport. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get him to shush, but I'm not sure if that's the welcome that he wants from me. Nikki, so everybody then, when you say we're having a Donna Hay night, does then everybody has to go and look for a Donna Hay recipe and make it?
Yes. So I had 4 cookbooks. I said anyone's welcome to borrow my books. You can pick them up, or I can drop them with you if you're out and about.
Surely they just get them online though, don't they?
Or you go to this website. Donna Hay has a really extensive website with loads of recipes. And, yeah, most people went online, and most people went away saying, oh, you know, Donna Hay's going to be one of my new go-tos or new favorites. Because actually Donna Hay's website, you can go there and you can just type in, I want to cook, you know, a meat dish for a party, or, you know, I want to have an appetizer, or I want to do an entree or a dessert, and you don't have to just search, you know, endlessly. You can narrow your search like most websites these days, to be honest.
And I'm sure, I think it was on one of our favorite podcasts, Don't Shoot the Messenger, where I heard them saying that Donna Hay has now stopped her magazine. There is no more Donna Hay magazine in Australia. I'm pretty sure I've heard that recently. But yeah, she is legendary now in Australia, because I think that probably would have been in the 90s, wouldn't it, that her cookbooks first came out, and they were just so, she was that new wave of beautifully photographed, simple. In fact, I think one of the first cookbooks might have been called Simplicity or Simple or something like that, you know, where it was just the plain white cover with a few items on it. And yes, I absolutely love her as well. And she's had this kind of evolution over the last 20 years too. And the reason I asked if there were any Brits there and knew her, because I've noticed her pop up in my feed with people like Jamie Oliver and doing videos with him, and I was thinking, oh, well, maybe she's made her way into the UK, or maybe that's just what the plan is at the moment.
Well, she may have, but this person hasn't lived in the UK for 10 years, so it might not have been exposed to that.
Yeah, that.
But she was actually here a couple of years ago. I had my dad was visiting, and he saw her in the lobby of the hotel he was staying at.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so she does world tours. She was here on some kind of book thing. Of course, he bowled up and started talking to her. And I don't remember the rest, but anyway.
As you do when you're overseas and you see a celebrity from your home country and you think, oh, well, that's cool, because we're both Australian and we know each other.
That's right. We would love, though, if you could review us, this podcast. The easiest way to write a review is actually to do it in an Apple podcast. You rate us out of 5 stars and then you add your comment for a review. If you've ever listened to another podcast in your life, you will know that it actually helps people find our podcast and listen to it. So as well as sharing, the most important thing you could do is leave us a review, and we'd really love you to do that.
Yes. Okay, Nikki, technically expat. Yes. Okay, so the last time we spoke, I was in Australia, which is bizarre because that was only last week, right? Last time we spoke, I had pulled the hard drive out of the safe that we'd had from, you know, 15 years ago, that has all of the babies and whatever and all of the important stuff from all that time ago. I'd plugged it into my laptop and click, 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 it didn't work. So I was asking you know, please tell me what to do, where I can go. So I went to my sort of trusted, not a Apple store, but sort of more a tech store, which I'd used when we built our house. I'd been to them to sort of talk about, you know, the NBN wiring and, you know, the best things to do in the house. So I knew that these guys would know what to do because they'd done stuff with the modems and all sorts of things. And it was so cute, Nikki, this guy. Like, the one thing about the teen generation is they completely understand the loss of these things, right?
Of digital.
Yeah, they understand what the digital world is to us and what it means, right? But this young guy just plugged it in and instantly went, it was like he'd told me one of my children had just passed or that the dog had died. Do you know, like he plugged it in and looked at me and said, I'm so sorry about this, but yes, it's gone.
And it's gone.
Yes.
It's gone.
It's gone. And I was just, oh my God. And I think I kind of knew, right? Because the click, click, click wasn't good. And he said, you know, this is why you always have to have two hard drives, like external hard drive backups. So we have in our house, we have a time machine, like an Apple time machine, but that is from since we were here. So that's the last sort of, you know, 9 years. This hard drive was, you know, all the computers and whatever pre that were on there. And so the answer to everyone's question is, please make sure you have two, that you have everything backed up twice on two separate hard drives. I actually thought we did. I found another hard drive that we had here, but it was blank. So obviously it was an idea that never happened. So the hard drive was purchased, but it was just never done. But my one sliver of hope is he has given me a card to a retrieval service where it's a place in town and you take your broken hard drive and they try and retrieve as much as they can. In his words, he said they should be able to retrieve some of it. You just might not get all of it, and there will be a price associated with that. So,
oh, yes, it's a price.
Yes. Have you done it, Nikki?
I haven't, but I know, because when you get to the stage where you're trying to retrieve your hard drive, people are desperate.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's where gouge pricing kicks in, because desperate people don't shop around. Desperate people just say, help me now.
Yes. And it is like when you're looking for the pictures of your firstborn with, you know, people from years ago from your life. Yeah, it is a help me now. Anyway, we will see. It's currently sitting in the safe back in Australia, because this all happened, of course, on the last day that I was in Australia, that I took it there, because that's how, you know, these things work. So when I'm back again next time, that will be the next saga. So okay, so I'm going to move along to expat money. Nikki, I've got one I really want to talk about for expat money, and that is someone posted the other day, they had a question about the 529. And then I had a look. We actually had three different posts about the 529. And I was thinking, what on earth is a 529? Someone was saying, could you use it for international schools? And someone else.
You have lived in America.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, a 529 plan is a college savings plan that offers sort of tax and financial aid benefits. It's can be used to invest for tuition and also for college costs. So, like, it can be used for high school tuition and college costs. There's evidently two types of plans. There's college saving plans and there's prepaid tuition plans. And almost every state in America has a 529 plan. So people were very kind, but I thought what was interesting when people were asking, can they contribute to it even if they're not living in the US? And if they had a home there and they were being paid in US dollars, somebody had told them they couldn't contribute to it. And the general consensus back from the group was absolutely, of course you can contribute to it. You've been given some very bad advice. But I've put a couple of links in the show notes, because there was a whole conversation about, can you use them for overseas schools, and could you use them if you were being absolutely killed by international school tuition, which I thought was a great question in our group. And I saw that there were a couple of articles where people said, yes, you can use them in a few countries. And one of those countries was Australia, and another one was Hong Kong. And I just thought, okay, I'll have to put these links in there as well. So for any of our American friends that are interested in their 529s and what it looks like and what they can do, make sure you do a search in the Two Fat Expats group, because there's already been a lot of conversation about it. But also I'll put the links in the show notes. What about you, Nikki? Did you end up downloading PocketSmith? We were talking about PocketSmith last week.
I did download PocketSmith, but my illness and my hosting children from Amsterdam to play volleyball and cookbook club, I haven't actually set it up yet. So I plan to do that in the next week, and I'll report back about the ease of
that. Is a fair excuse, like, because you do actually sound like you're dying right now. So
but if you would like to leave a message, ask a message or ask a question, you can do that, of course, from everyone remembers, by going to our website, twofatexpats.com, and press on the microphone button. It's just like leaving us a voicemail, except it's better, because if you don't like what you said the first time, you can delete it and do it again.
Yes. Okay, how are you screwing up your expat child this week, Nikki? Or have you read anything about anyone else who's screwing up their expat children?
Well, yesterday in my state, I had to drag myself out of bed. We were meant to record yesterday, and I said, I can't record because I can barely speak. But I did have to go to school to have a briefing from the principal about my son is in grade 10 at an IB school. And you yourself had children in grade 10 in an IB school, and that is a big deal. It's a big year. You have your personal project. And then you also have to decide, you make choices for the following 2 years. in the diploma program, or our school is introducing next year the CP, the career program. So there was a lot of information, and I'm not sure anyone went out any the wiser, but it was a start. The principal said, I'm starting the conversation with you. There was a lot of confused and crazy people.
Yeah.
With a lot of questions.
Without getting too in-depth about it, because I have a child who's doing her IB at the moment. She's, I think, her exams start at the end of October, to give you an idea of where we're at. I wouldn't wish upon anyone at the moment, whether they be parent or child. I can tell you it's hideous. That's one thing I think people hadn't told me, is the not the pressure and the work of what your child will be under, but also the change in your child that year because of the continual conversation about exams coming up and how it's going to look and how you're going to go and what you're going to do next year and whatever. God, we put a lot of stress on our children in their final year of school without you know, telling them to study, just the general conversation they have. Do you know what I mean? So, Nikki, what is the difference, though, if you're doing IB or CP, is it?
So IB has two strands, DP and CP. Right. So DP is the diploma program, which is what your Lizzie is doing.
Yes.
And where you take your three subjects on the normal level and your three subjects on your higher level, and you do your theory of knowledge and you do your essay and you do your all the other things you have to do. And then CP is a relatively new program, and I'm finding out more about it as we go. It's a career-based program. So the way that it's going to run at our school, and from what I've said, because I put a question in our trusty Facebook group to find out information, and it seems to run differently in different schools, but you do two diploma program subjects just the same way as everyone in the diploma program does it, and then you do three things that are effectively, from what I understand, and please feel free to tell me if I'm wrong, courses, they're sort of like TAFE courses. So you get sort of equivalent technical certificates. So it's meant to be designed for someone who wants to, they say it's not necessary. So there are universities in the UK that accept it. Universities in Germany don't accept it yet because they're still understanding how it works. I really want to know if universities in Australia accept it. And from what I found out last night on the Facebook group from someone who works in Bangkok, that yes, they have CP at their school, and universities in Australia do accept it. But and then you do internships. You don't do a tier. You don't do a theory of knowledge, but you do something else instead of that. It's sort of just a different kind of programs. Because so the IB, the diploma program, it's quite academically rigorous,
incredibly,
and it's designed. Really, if you're not going to university, it feels really silly to be doing that, right?
Yes.
So for a lot of schools that offer IB, they have to, you know, if that's the only program they have, and for kids that aren't cut out for university or want to go a different way or already have an idea about what they want to do in the world, because you can have different strands of these other subjects that you do apart from the DP subjects. So they can be business subjects. They can be sort of theatre performing arts subjects, and they can be sort of sports science subjects.
Yeah. No, so, that makes a lot of sense because, yes, IB is incredibly academically rigorous, and where it differs, I think, with us going back to Australia is, you know, this is a school where they offer IB and, you know, there's, you know, I guess you would, if you're doing a percentage, you'd say that at the very most, there'd be 20% of the girls in Year 12 that have chosen IB. The majority are choosing to do what in our state is called SACE. And there is a vast difference of the expectation of what they have to do. So if she was doing SACE, it's a lot more project work and doing a lot more assessments rather than exams. So she would do five subjects and she may only have two exams at the end of the year for those subjects because the rest would have been done over the past year or so. But when you do IB, it's all exams and it's 70% of the result is exams, and you have independent assessments for each subject, and you do a 4,000 word extended essay, which for some crazy reason she's chosen to do in French. And it is so, you know, just so much work. And her biology teacher said to me the other day, because I said, you know, it just seems like it's really full on. She said, yeah, IB biology is like doing first year biology when you're doing medicine at university.
Yeah. Biology is not the easy science option.
No. No, it used to be the easy science option.
That's why I did it.
Yes. Well, we had the lovely Mr. Merton who said, how do you tell the sex of a chromosome? You pull down its genes. All right, Nikki, let's play that game that you were talking about where we got to do a little flashback, because I'm busting to hear it.
Okay, so what I did was went back and got some snippets of some episodes, and I just want you to listen to them. So if you just want to play the first one now, and I'll tell you what it is in advance because it's an easy pick, but it's the first part of the first podcast that you ever did.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm just going to go back into the bit. So if anyone's wondering how I do this, Nikki gets these snippets and she puts them in Slack, which is what we use to talk to each other. So I'm just opening Slack now, and I'm going to have a listen, episode 100 snippets. Okay. So I do this one here that says first episode intro. Okay.
That's it.
1 second, the little wheel's going round and round and round. Okay, I'm pressing play.
Okay, hello and welcome. This is Kirsty Rice from Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle with
Sarah Derrick from Lady Sadie's Emporium.
And we also have a business called Blogging Me for bloggers in the Middle East. But today we're going to do our very first podcast, and our podcast is called Too Fat Expats.
And I've just realised I've applied lipstick for a podcast and no one can see me.
So we've called it Too Fat Expats because we kind of think that expat life can be great. It can be as big as you want it to be or as fat as you like it.
Yeah, live a fat life.
Live a fat life. And also because we're a little bit fat.
A little bit.
Just a little bit fat.
Curvaceous.
Curvaceous. And we don't care. I think it's really interesting when you say, I'm a little bit fat, and people say, oh, don't say that. Don't
I can't
say...
stand that because I am.
Yeah.
And I have a lot below the counter.
Anyway, what we'd like to do today is make a little podcast, kind of, it doesn't have to be solely expat, but we're kind of hoping that if there's anyone out there that's feeling a little bit isolated or a little bit stranded in their new location, that this might be some tips on expat life, but also just general life for anyone who's moving, even if you're doing an internal move or you've, you know, moved from one city to another, or just general life and what the stuff that we kind of have on our blogs.
A little bit for everyone.
Yeah. Okay. So, oh my God, I'd just forgotten how funny Sarah is. I've got a lot going on. What was it? Under the counter.
Under the counter. So that was your mission statement from your first ever intro of your first episode. What do you think?
Oh,
how do you feel?
Wow. So when Sarah and I first did that, our first episode, we are sitting down in the lounge room, and that's the difference. Sarah and I got to sit in the same room, and we did.
I know.
I know. And I wish I could do that with you, Nikki, because it does make it just the timing of being able to see someone's face and whatever. I've often wondered, Nikki, if we need to have Skype on while we're doing this. So we could
Well, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I haven't had a shower today. My hair is greasy. I need a bun on top of my head, and I'm not wearing lipstick. So I don't think I'm up for Skype right now.
So how it used to work with Sarah and I is one of us would go to each other's houses. It was usually at my house. And, yeah, we started off out in the lounge room because, you know, we had no idea about sound or how any of it worked. So we'd just open GarageBand, have a microphone, and off we'd go. And, yes, for those who have seen Sarah, I don't know if I've ever seen Sarah without her lipstick or her eyebrows or, you know, just, she is a gorgeous looking girl. And, But yeah, giggle. Oh my God, we had some giggles. And you know, the usual disasters. I would constantly delete the entire episode after we'd recorded it, or but it was fun. It was really good fun. So yes, we started and we did, I think we recorded two or three episodes immediately, because somebody had said it's good to sort of have a bit of a catalogue there. And I think we probably, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Nikki, because I can't remember, but I reckon it was probably after those three episodes that we realised, oh, we should probably interview some people, because, or else it's just going to be the two of us just talking about us.
Well, you know, you say that, and then I'd like to introduce you to the second snippet, which came very early on and was quite large accolades for such an early three episodes into your podcast. So just if you want to listen to the second bit.
Okay.
As I was looking around, because I, you know, sometimes if you're looking around for new podcasts, you can go to the obvious spot, which is, you know, what are the top 10 or top 20 podcasts that are being downloaded around the world right now? And that's a good place, I suppose, to find relatively good podcasts. But sometimes you want to see what else is out there that might be a little bit new, that hasn't charted, but might be worth having a listen to. And I stumbled across this one and I sort of thought, well, it sort of taps into, I think, a feeling that a lot of people have, you know, which is you dream sometimes of packing up your whole life and moving overseas. You know, there's something a bit alluring about that. I mean, there's something really weird about the fact that we think that living the life that we do over here is going to be that much more exciting just because it's in another country. And I suppose initially it would be, but after a while it might just end up being the same sort of life you have over here.
Yes.
I guess, you know.
So what's the tone of this podcast?
Well, this is quite interesting. Okay, for a start, I mean, they do take themselves not overly seriously, but these two ladies have, they're Kirsty Rice and Sarah Derrick. Now, they're two Australian women. They're living in Doha at the moment in the Middle East. So that sort of colours a lot of the podcast, is their experiences there. But both of them have been doing this expat thing for quite some time. They don't say what line of work their husbands are in, but clearly living overseas is more than just a whim. They're sort of in it for the long haul. Now, it's only very new, this podcast. There's only actually three episodes online at the moment. The two of them were bloggers up until now. They've both got separate blogs. And they also haven't known each other for all that long, which makes it quite interesting. But the one thing they do know very well is the highs and the lows, and the pitfalls and the payoffs of living this expat life. It's sort of a lighthearted look at the experience of living overseas, but also looking at some of the more serious aspects as well. And it's quite well done. Just have a listen.
Did it record? No, it hasn't. Oh, yes, it has. Two fat expats.
Two fat expats.
I think our most interesting move was from Libya to Canada. And this is when we got to Canada, but there had been some sort of mouse situation inside our container. So when they cracked open the back of it in our driveway in Canada, mice just literally raced out like, freedom! They weren't hungry because they'd been eating everything in our
container. We arrived at midnight, arrived at the hotel, and I think the first call to prayer was about 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And I shot up in my bed. And I said to Matt, oh, something's happening. We've got to go. And he said, no, that's the call to prayer. Yeah, now that's my most favourite thing. And yeah, when we leave, it will be one of the things that I miss.
Living in an expat world, you have friends from all walks of life and all different countries.
And we all kiss differently.
And we all kiss differently.
Yes.
So there's sometimes just the one cheeked kiss, the two cheeked kiss. I've had a three cheeked kiss. And my head was just flailing back
and forth.
When
we lived in Libya, we had a lot of Dutch friends as well.
They love a three kiss.
They love a three kiss.
Yes.
And Lebanese
they love a three kiss.
They love a three kiss.
Yeah.
I find the three kiss challenging.
But culture, like, do you know what I love seeing? I love seeing the Qatari men do the nose kisses.
Oh, I love that too.
Love it.
Love it.
Yeah, look, I think there's lots of very relatable stuff there.
Well, look, to be honest, it's a cross between, you know, there were shades of Kath and Kim in there somewhere, I think.
Oh, shades of Kath and Kim. That is gold.
I love the shades of Kath and Kim. That is gold. And Kath and Kim, just if any of our listeners are unsure what Kath and Kim is, Kath and Kim series is an Australian comedy series and now available on American Netflix. So,
oh, is it really?
Go to it. Yes.
Yes, I remember my friend Vanessa, who had moved back to Australia and was living near Noosa, and she was driving home, and on this thing came, this preview of our podcast. She was like, "What? Oh my God." And sent me a text and said, "Someone's previewing your podcast on the ABC." Yes, I thought it was nice that he went and found us. I don't know how he managed to find us.
So bizarre. I know.
And it was very kind of him. It was cute. But I had forgotten about that, the talking about the kissing and the talking about that sort of expat life. But yes.
Well, I live in Northern Europe now and there's plenty of Dutch people. There's lots of three kisses going on.
Yeah. And do you know my worst one? I don't mind getting the kiss thing wrong here in Qatar. Like, you know, everybody expects it because there's so many different expats and they're all coming from different, you know, kissing world. But the bit that I really cringe at with myself is when I go back to Australia and I do the double kiss and you can just feel people looking at you like, "Oh, you pretentious prat."
Yeah, because it's, yes. And that's a cultural thing, right? Yeah. You're not being pretentious.
I'm not. I'm just into the habit, do you know? And so, yeah, but I can feel it where people go, "Oh, look at her with her double kissing. How, you know, who does she think she is?" And I really try not to do it. Yes. Okay, what have we got next?
Okay, next one. I said that was for season one. So the next one is the first episode of season two. I think it'll feel very familiar to you.
Okay.
Yes, we're back.
It's Hello, everyone. It's season two. How exciting.
I know. Season two, episode one.
And we thought we'd have a cliffhanger for season one, but we do.
So for those who don't know what we're talking about, we had a couple of things go down, and that was about a day before I was due to fly back to Doha. I went for a mammogram, and I had only gone because I'd been at the doctors. I'd taken the kids to the doctors and had all their bits and pieces all checked out and sort of filed them in one by one. And then right at the end, the GP sort of said to me, "What about you? Is there anything for you?" And, you know, I probably wouldn't have even said it, but I had to sort of think, well, what about me? Have I had any issues? And I said, "Oh, look, I had this sort of fatty tissue thing under my arm, but they checked it out in Doha and it's fine." And she thankfully said, "Let me have a look at it," and demanded that I go for a mammogram the next day.
Right.
And I tried to put her off and tried to tell her that, no, that didn't really fit because I had more important things to do, like pack up the house and go for lunch with my girlfriend. Get my year supply of tampons, you know, a couple more jars of Vegemite, few licorice bullets. And anyway, I went off for the mammogram, which I nearly cancelled, and it turned out, I was so close to just not going because it all seemed a bit too hard with people watching the kids while I went off and it was the last day and, you know, all that stuff.
It was just too much of a hassle.
Yeah, that was it. And, you know, because I was so sure that this thing was just a fatty cyst. Anyway, it turns out it was. It was just that.
Okay.
But on my other boob, they found a lump. And so it was just everything kind of spiraled from there. It was we found a lump because they knew I was getting on a plane on the Sunday.
Yeah.
They were very pushy about, no, we think it's cancer. And I kept saying to them, but how do you know? Like, don't you have to send it off for a biopsy and do this and do that? But because they knew I was getting on a plane, she said, look, we know what cancer looks like and that definitely looks like cancer. You should not be getting on a plane. And so within the next couple of hours, I had been to a breast surgeon and been back and had, you know, the biopsy and been to my GP and all of a sudden I was cursed with breast cancer.
And did it all feel like the whole world was going down? Did everything go in slow motion?
Wow. That's weird listening to the breast cancer one again. That's quite...
I was conflicted whether to include it, but I thought it's such a big part of the story.
Yes.
of the podcast, because so many people were following your illness and the story of it and how you coped with it and how you dealt with the healthcare.
Yeah. And you know, when I listen to that, I can picture, because Sarah was in Doha and I was in Australia, because I didn't come back. You know, we were meant to, yeah. I was meant to just come back and off we were going to go with our normal everyday lives. Sarah and I were doing, we were doing a lot more blogging back then and doing blogging conferences and things, or, you know, we did a blogging conference or course or whatever. So that was our world back then. And, I just didn't come back because I had to have surgery and have the lump removed. And, just such a bizarre time. It was sort of, it was this time 3 years ago.
And it's kind of interesting because I listened to a lot of episodes and bits of a lot of episodes, and I heard, you know, you're doing your treatment, everything's fine, everything's good, but I never sort of heard, there was never kind of a wrap up. It sort of was just like incorporated into your everyday life and you kind of kept going, which is amazing considering everything you went through. So, props to you.
I did. I came back and I can remember Sarah and I, we were sponsored by the Shangri-La in Doha, and we had a breast cancer breakfast or a morning tea or something, because it's always that pink day in October, isn't it? And I can remember the big thing at the time, I had had my first chemo and I was hosting this breakfast at my house with Sarah. And the big thing was my hair going to fall out before the breakfast? Because your hair tends to fall out around the 14-day mark after chemo, and this was on day 14. And Sarah told me later that it was evidently quite obvious that my hair was thinning, but it hadn't done the whole clumps and things yet. So she could see, oh, this is, you know, this is about to happen. Yeah, and then it was, you know, headscarf city for the next few months, and then we started building the house and all the rest of it to sort of keep going. But it all kind of just moved along. You're right, we never did have a, because that's the thing with breast cancer, is you never do have that moment. You never have the woohoo, I'm free and clear. It doesn't happen. It's the biggest myth. What happens is you continue to have mammograms and, you know, maybe even an MRI or an ultrasound or whatever, where people will say, well, there's no evidence of the disease. But you never know if you're clear. And what I've never really understood is I have mammograms and I have MRIs and things on my boobs now. But the bottom line is if the cancer was to return, it would return probably most likely in the most common thing that happens with breast cancer is it comes back in your brain or your bones or your liver or somewhere else, right? So when I have these mammograms and things, as much as I'll, you know, maybe for my mother's sake, say, oh, there was no evidence, it was all clear, Mum, and she's happy. The bottom line is I'm thinking, well, you know, that pain in my back, maybe that's bone cancer or, you know, that headache. Yeah, and I think most people do you know, they're just waiting, because we all know people, you know, at the time that this all happened, we actually did a episode on expat cancer just before I was diagnosed, it was right when I was diagnosed.
Yeah, it was that episode.
Yeah, and so we did expat cancer and I interviewed a beautiful woman called Emma, who I had never met, but her husband was in Qatar and he was having treatment. Well, her husband's passed away now. So that's, you know, my reality, and unfortunately hers, of her beautiful husband, Mike. They ended up becoming, you know, friends, and, you know, he did his treatment and as far as we knew, he was all clear, and then it came back. And she's now back in Australia with her two boys without him. So, yeah, I don't, it's a funny thing. I guess we just continued on and didn't wrap it up because there never is a wrap up. Do you know? I get, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I want
to change the tone entirely now with the next clip. So let's go to the next clip.
Okay. I'm pushing play.
The hills are alive with the two fat expats. Oh.
The gin has been poured with tonic and ice. We hope you enjoy our podcast. A rating or review would be very nice.
That took us how many goes to get?
Oh my God, way too many.
How much is that expat on the podcast? The one with the big glass of gin. How much is that expat on the podcast? I do hope you will listen in.
Our house in our little expat street.
Our house. We've only lived here for 6 weeks.
Our house. I still can't find the telephone.
Our house. And I still get lost driving home.
Our house. The rent costs more than my first car.
Our house. And it doesn't have a bath.
Our house. In our little expat street.
Our house. But it's full of GNTs. Money, money, money. Must save money in an expat world.
Money, money, money. Must spend money in an expat world.
Oh.
Did you know that as a little girl, I was obsessed with ABBA?
Me too. And you're younger
like
than me.
Obsessed.
Oh, yes.
Because I'm free. I'm a free expat. Yeah, I'm free. But I'm homeless and I'm free. Can't afford the school fees. Yeah, I'm free with nowhere to go.
That last bit's a bit sad.
Yeah,
it is. But, you know, it reminds me of Jerry Maguire because that was a song he was singing when he was made redundant. Well, he was just fired.
Big difference.
And today we are talking about redundancy.
We are,
which is why we've chosen that song. Oh, my God. Can I just apologize to everyone now for that? Oh, I think the singing was really because technically we had no idea how to put a tune in, nor did we know the rules about music and how music worked. But it was definitely better when the two of us were together, when we weren't trying to do it solo. But yes, my apologies to all.
No, I think it's it was really somewhat people's favorite part. Like and the way that you really coordinated the music in with a theme of the week, like it was excellent. You really there was a lot of thought went into that, a lot of creativity. I'm very happy it doesn't happen now, but I'm just saying.
I missed the theme of the week. I think the theme of the week was hard because if it wasn't your thing and you weren't interested, it kind of meant it was a bit dull for you. But, do you know, if it was your thing and you were, like if it was expat redundancy or expat divorce or expat sex was funny. Sarah was so funny in that episode. But, it's fun. I think we're a little bit more well-rounded now. But it's that whole thing, it evolves, isn't it? When I think back to season one and two, I don't even think we didn't have a group. We didn't have an expat group. We had a page, but it wasn't, you know, all that interactive from memory, I don't think.
Okay, so that was season one and two, and now we're moving to season three.
Okay, pushing play now.
All right, I'm going to start now, okay?
Okay.
All right. Hello, Nikki Boffitt. How are you?
Yes, good. And not feeling any pressure at all.
Now, what did you say to me before? Because I should explain to people that you're a little bit worried that Sarah is very loved and that you've got big shoes to fill.
Very big.
Yes. And what did you say to me before about
I said I feel a little bit like Ashton Kutcher in Two and a Half Men. Can you be replaced? Can there be a ratings? Does it impact the ratings? What will happen next?
Oh, my God, I love that from the very first day it was always, hello, Nikki Moffat, how are you?
That's right. That's what everyone says that in my house. Nicky Moffat, Kirsty Rice. You have to say hello, Kirsty Rice. When I say, someone says, oh, who's that? I sort of just messaging, who are you messaging? Kirsty. Kirsty Rice?
Yes, Kirsty Rice. That's correct. Okay, any more?
Yes, one last one. I know we're running on time, but hopefully people will forgive us but this is, you can listen and then we can talk.
Okay.
In the shot, which is incredibly grainy and hard to decipher, I'm standing on Orchard Road out the front of Starbucks. You know the one that's just down here and goes down? G and I had come to Singapore from Jakarta for our very first ever visa run. We were so young and green, and we really thought we'd struck expat gold. After our first 6 weeks in Jakarta, we were getting a weekend in Singapore in a hotel paid for by the company, and they were making us go, insisting we went. A number of things happened that weekend. We had to move hotel room 3 times due to different dramas. We weren't here, just letting you know, Georgina. Leaking ceilings, cigarette stained smoke walls and a party in the room next door. But the biggest thing I remember from that weekend was a pair of pink shoes, hot pink shoes. They were slip-ons with a soft sole that almost gave you a bounce with each step. And they were the most comfortable slip-on shoes a six-month pregnant woman could have dreamt of. I loved those shoes. So in a very grainy shot outside of Starbucks, you can see me glowing with a mixture of pregnancy and tropical humidity. So excited to be travelling, so loving my new shoes. So the plan was for today was to share the photo with you and chat about our former expat selves. What would we say if we had the chance to go back and meet our former expat self? If I was to walk outside now and see that Kirsty from February 2000 standing out the front of Starbucks 6 weeks into her first posting, what would I say to her? I asked all of you on Facebook, except Savita, of course, and there were some fantastic answers. Anne-Marie, who's here today and will kill me for mentioning that she is here today, came up with one of my favourites, and I think it's what I would say too, and that is walk away from negative people. Watch and just listen for a while. You know, it's those people that will drag you down in any place. Christy, who lives in Doha and is my new companion at the rugby club, said take photos of everyday stuff, lots and lots of photos. I wish I had pictures of our kitchen in Libya. I wish I had pictures of every car that we'd driven, just every kid's bedroom. I didn't think to take all those photos, just stuff that transports you back into that life. Amanda said, no matter how long or how short your stay may be, make it your home, which we were talking about just before. Anne said, spend more time to get to know the locals and less time in your comfort zone. There's nothing more embarrassing than leaving a place and you don't really, really know the culture. But it was Catherine Walwerk who had us all on the floor with this very bang-on statement. Train to become a hairdresser and specialise in blonde highlights. You'll make a fortune wherever you live. She said, I can't even begin to tell you how I looked after having blonde highlights in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam.
That is so good. I reckon it would be trained to become a hairdresser and also trained to maybe back in the day become an aerobics instructor. Maybe now it's more Zumba or, CrossFit, F45, become one of those people because you'll get a job everywhere you go. That was, of course, our Two Fat Expats meetup in Singapore, and I did a reading, which, you know, me, Nikki, I had naturally written the night before when I had arrived. But, that was such a good meetup, that meetup in Singapore.
Can I also just say that the photo you were talking about was on the hard drive that's in the safe in Australia. Yes. Because I was listening to that episode and it says you went to the safe, got out the hard drive, you got out an old computer. So last week I was talking about maybe it's the computer you're using. And I thought, oh, I must tell Kirsty about this. And then when you said the update, I thought, oh, okay. Anyway, so that was just a little bit of a walk through memory lane of.
Oh, that was. Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I don't know if we've just bored the pants off of everyone else, but I really enjoyed it. Okay, Nikki, I reckon for this next bit we'll just whiz by and maybe one of us will just give one of our suggestions or else this podcast is going to go forever. So
You do books.
Okay, well, I'll actually do the book next week because I've only read a couple of chapters and our book group is next week. So I'll do that. If you're still reading,
I'll push books back as well.
So maybe we'll just tell the two. So Nikki, I'm reading Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng, and I'm only into like the third chapter, and it's absolutely intoxicating because I cannot work out what the story is behind the story yet. You?
I am reading Educated by Tara Westover, and I've just started it too. So I'll wait to get a better update on that next week. What about a movie?
Okay, movie that I have just watched is Tully. Have you seen anything about Tully?
I haven't, but I thought it was the book, but it's not the book. There was a very famous book by Paulina Simmons several years ago, but that's not the book. It's another one, yeah.
Ah, so this is lead character is Charlize Theron. And I was going to say she is so good at playing very, very real characters. She doesn't care about being, because, I mean, she is one of the most glamorous, beautiful women around. Remember when she did Monster and she just looked mean? Well, in this she looks like a new mother, tired and out of shape and hair not perfect, and just ready to lose her shit at any moment. There is a big twist in this movie, and I do not want to ruin it and have a spoiler, but I'd love to talk. Please, someone phone in and tell me if you've watched it, whether when the twist came in the movie, whether you'd had enough kind of what I would call connectors throughout the movie. Do you know when there's that twist in a movie and you go, oh, it all makes sense, you know, that bit, that bit, yes, that bit, that bit? I wasn't sure if there was enough of that. Mm-hmm. It was sort of this, oh, okay. And then I had to go back and really think what happened in those bits to make it happen. Anyway, what is beautiful about this book, it is so honest about motherhood, the exhaustion, her body, that whole thing where she has, her children are not perfect. There's the kicking of the seat in the car and the please, please, please be quiet of the screaming baby. It just reminded me, I took a brand new baby with me on a look-see once to Houston. And I remember getting lost and not having a sat nav, and I had to go. My husband was there doing some training, and I had a screaming baby in the back seat that I couldn't comfort because I couldn't get out of the car to sort of soothe it. And just that, you know, it's not all rosy. It's just not all rosy. I thought it was a great movie. Really good.
Excellent.
Okay, do you want to talk about Telly?
Yes, I'll talk about Telly Sharp Objects. So Sharp Objects is a mini series. I think it was 6 episodes. It's starring Amy Adams, who I quite like as an actor. She's an alcoholic reporter in St. Louis, who is struggling, and her boss sends her back to her hometown, which is called Wind Gap in Missouri, where some young girls have gone missing and turning up murdered. And the title Sharp Objects comes from, I think, the fact that she cuts herself. So the story is told in a series of flashbacks of all the terrible things in her life that have led her to this point. She has a very complicated relationship with her mother and her younger stepsister. She had another sister die when she was younger. And that's another part of the storyline that gets revealed through the flashbacks. So people either loved or hated this. I don't know if you ever heard, have you heard anyone talk about this, Kirsty, or have you watched it?
No, I've seen a snippet of it, but I haven't heard any feedback. To me, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's slow. It feels slow, but it's a very complicated underlying story. So you really need the time and the flashbacks to sort of get into it. I hadn't read the book. There are a few massive twists at the end, and you have to watch all the way after the credits on the last episode to get the last sort of twist. Yeah. So it's
how many people would miss that?
I don't know, because when it came out, the last episode, it was all over the media that you had to watch. Like it said, if you didn't watch till the very end, you know, go back and do it. So I'm not sure, but it's well worth it. I recommend. It's in my recommended pile.
I think for podcasts we should talk about the one that we've both watched. So I'm on the final episode of The Teacher's Pet, and I think maybe I'm the last person left in Australia to listen to The Teacher's Pet. I think pretty well every other Australian has, but I am at the end. So what did you think?
Well, when it first came out, the first few episodes, I was hooked. And I have listened to them all. I think it's an incredible story in the breadth of it and just the horrifying fact of, you know, that nothing was done about either of the sort of main themes of the podcast. But it got really repetitive to me. I kind of felt like he was going over the same stuff a lot in further episodes. I didn't feel like there was always new things. I don't know. I don't love the story. I'm captivated by the story.
So maybe we should explain what the story is for those
who haven't. Well, I was going to say if people don't know what the story is, yes, I can do that. So the story is it's a story about a lady called Lynn Dawson, who is a young mother in her early 30s in Sydney in the 1980s. And she went missing. Her husband said that she called him and said she was off to join a cult or religious group and wouldn't be coming back. And the next day he had already moved into the house, a 16-year-old girl from his school that he had a sexual relationship with and soon after married. And I think, and so it's a kind of dual sort of investigation in that it exposes through this 16-year-old girl and her sort of storyline the fact that he was a footballer from the 1980s. He played rugby league and he had a twin brother and they were sort of glamorous, and the twin brother lived on the same street with his family. And at the school there are a lot of male teachers sleeping with students at the school. So that's sort of one sort of storyline, and the other storyline is, of course, that nobody has ever heard of from his wife again. Did I get that right? Is there something you'd say differently or change?
No, I think you're bang on. I think what I found really interesting, Nikki, is that they talk about this being in Sydney and on the northern beaches, and I love the way they refer to it as the Insular Peninsula. Right?
Yes.
I just thought it is a great snapshot, because I remember when I was a kid and reading Puberty Blues, which was set in Cronulla in Sydney, and thinking, oh, because it was so harsh, right? It was just such a harsh thing to read and watch of what was happening to young girls. But this has made me just realise how sexist the country was in that time, and the fact that people, you know, the expectations. There's a bit in this podcast where they talk about Lynn Dawson, the wife, who would have been, you know, in her, early 30s?
Early 30s, yeah.
Yeah, at that stage. And so she was in her late 20s because it was pre-children, and she'd gone to get a dress made, and how she had bruises on her. And and she was married, that's right. And they were asking, you know, why it wasn't reported when there were these bruises on her that she was, you know, obviously getting sort of, you know, I guess, roughed up. And this woman made, the dressmaker made some comment about, oh, well, I guess I saw mainly, single girls, not married girls, so I wasn't used to it. As if, you know, well, of course single girls wouldn't get bashed up, but, yeah, you'd probably would be more likely to be bashed up once you were married. You know, it was just scary to think of what was ignored, whether it was ignored, you know, because he was a star rugby player, or whether it was ignored because it was a sign of the times and how women were treated at the time. But on your point of, is his name Hedley, the guy who's running Hedley the show?
Thomas, yes.
Hedley Thomas, the journalist. I wondered too, was that a print journalism thing where when you're in print journalism, you constantly recap the story in case it hasn't been read before? Do you know, you've got to give the little prelude to it in the beginning to let people know where you're up to and where the story is. And did that carry into the podcast a bit? Because there was this constant, like you said, recap where they kind of went over it again and again and again, whereas maybe if it had been solely produced as a podcast story, would they expect that those of us, you know, would binge it all the way through?
It was solely produced as a podcast. So, but I guess he is a print
journalist. No, but I mean he's not only, that's exactly what I meant, that he's a print journalist that is doing a podcast like a print journalist.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. So the style wasn't adapted. So the production team working with him didn't sort of go down that track. He was releasing it week to week, so that's another thing. You know, you could have forgotten what you heard last week, but a lot of people don't consume podcasts that way either. A lot of people wait and consume the whole thing. So I guess it's a really fine line to walk in terms of let's have a recap. But it just seemed the recap was so often that if you're listening to it, you're like, yeah, I got this. It sort of felt like a lot of the episode was going over the same ground.
Yeah. You know,
it's horrifying as it was.
Nikki, when you said you saw a Facebook post where someone said they're digging, so did they go and dig? Has the case been reopened and are they digging now?
So last week or the week before I saw someone's Facebook post and it just said they're digging. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, they're digging. It's the teacher's pet. And they are. I did read a newspaper article last week saying that the police have gone to the house and they are now looking in another part on the property for Lynn's remains. But I don't know what the outcome is. And obviously they're not going to give any further information about that. So, yeah, I haven't gone back and had a look, but I'll be sure to follow that up.
Yeah, I think probably the really interesting, there is going to be, you know, there'll be far more interest even later if they do find her body. But also I want to know more about her girls. I want to know sort of the confusion there and how they're feeling. I thought it was just the saddest thing when they said, you know, her father had died and that her mother was spent a lot of the funeral with one eye on the door thinking that she might walk in at any time. It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking because, when you listen to the podcast, the mother is sort of very key to the story because she was very close with her daughter. She also loved her son-in-law and she also kept a diary. So she could – and so they were able to refer to actual diary entries that she had made. And but the daughters, I mean, it must be very difficult. It must be very difficult for them to be interviewed or, you know, this is one of their, the parent that they've grown up with now being accused of something that, you know, when they were growing up, it was sort of just not discussed with them, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to hear from the third wife. I want to know what she's thinking now.
Well, she's the one that he's married to now, right? So now they're sort of in lockdown and you don't get to sort of see them or talk to them. But, I don't know whether she's probably got a lawyer or not. I'm not sure what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah, very interesting.
I'm going to save my great expat tip for next week because, yes, this episode's now gone for a long time. Yeah. 101, roll on episode 101.
Yeah, just 100, just like it's any other day of the week. No. Congratulations, Kirsty Rice, on 100 episodes of Too Fat Expat.
And so is it really your 50?
I think it's my 50, yes. I think I worked out it's my 50.
Wow.
I'm halfway. Halfway to you.
Bloody good work. Well done.
Okay. All right. We'll speak to everyone next week. Bye. Okay.
Bye.